Welcome to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Each week on this program, Jeff and his guests share their expertise, personal anecdotes, and the latest industry news to keep you in the loop. Now, to provide you with insight and help you navigate the consistently changing world of real estate lending, here is your host for The Mortgage Voice, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry, and welcome to the show. Thank you very much for listening, tuning in. Each and every week, we bring to you answers to questions like, can I afford a mortgage? Will there be anything I can buy when I can afford a mortgage? Why are property values going up? How come I have to continue to give documentation to my loan officer when I already gave him all the loan all the information that he asked for? All of these questions and more we try to get to each and every week. Most of the things that we talk about are reasons for things happening, i.e., why is inflation happening and what does it have to do with my loan? How come the funds available for my loan cost me more money today than they did yesterday? Okay, so some of these questions are universal and they happen in every market. But specifically to this market, when we talk about rising interest rates, we usually talk about environmental issues or issues having to do with regulatory issues at the federal or state level. Let's talk quickly about, Let's talk about, the default on the debt. Now, national politics is not what this show does, and I don't choose sides. I have opinions, but they're so weak and so easily discarded that you can just laugh at them. However, the debt. Why is the debt important to me who is trying to get a mortgage to buy a house in a certain state in the country? Why is this important? Well, most of it has to do with a lender and lender risk. There are five or six, maybe seven large institutional banks in the U.S. Everybody knows who they are. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chase, Citicorp, Mellon, there's three or four others. And these banks are the ones that determine who determine for you, if you go to them, the rates that you're going to have. But they have it because the determination of how much money they borrow is based on an agreement they have that they borrow X amount of money at a certain price from the Treasury or from the Fed directly. These big, large institutions are affected by the littlest bump in the road. If Bank of America is affected by a whisper or a rumor that there's going to be issues with the economy, rates are going to go up with them. Now, these large banks also lend out to smaller banks. Wells Fargo lends out to probably 100 different small lenders in the U.S. And what they do when they get scared is they bump the rate to their particular people. So things like the debt itself, the debt out there, which is, you know, so large we can't even describe to you the number of zeros in it, let alone the actual cost of that debt on you. So the debt. We're talking about the debt defaulting, and the debt defaulting here in the U.S. has never happened before. And what I mean by that is if you buy bonds, and we talk about the 10-year bond all the time on this show because that is determining what your particular rate is. The why the 10-year is because it is associated directly with mortgage and mortgages and mortgage rates. The 10-year, the mortgage rates. The 10-year goes up, mortgage rates go up. Now, the bonds themselves are debt, the U.S. debt. Now, the U.S. debt as a whole needs to have Congress authorize the ability of that debt to go up. If they don't authorize it, we can't issue any more debt. Issuing any more debt is like if you want to go out and buy the 10-year note at, you know, X amount of dollars, whatever it is today, that's what exactly you're going to have to do. Several things about the debt itself, or the lack thereof of raising the debt ceiling, is that it sends nervous signals to the market. You've already seen it, right? We're just talking about it. It hasn't happened. It may never happen. But the mere fact that it is happening has caused rates to spike. Let's talk rates for a second. The 30-year fixed rate, which was 2 weeks ago at 2.88 or 2.75 to 2.88 is now at 3.16. May not seem a lot, but if you're borrowing $1 billion, if you're borrowing $100 billion, basis points, which is if you take a percentage of your loan, 1% or 1 point, and divide it by 100, one of those hundreds is a basis point. So basis points themselves represent a percentage of 1% of the loan or 1% of the amount that you're basis pointing, okay? So if, in fact, we've gone from 2.75 to 3.16, you figure it out. That's over a quarter point. And that's a big deal if you're borrowing in the billions of dollars. So therefore, that's not a good thing. The 15-year is at 2.60, again up. The FHA is at 2.80, again up. 3.19 for jumbo, and that's only up a little bit. The jumbo market doesn't fluctuate as much. 2.75 for the 5-1 ARM. Now the 10-year. So the yield on the 10-year is why rates have to go up on the mortgage interest rate. Why? Because if you're enticing people to buy your debt, you have to offer them something that they aren't currently getting if, in fact, they don't want to buy it. U.S. debt, if, in fact, we're looking at a debt ceiling not being extended, is probably going to be worthless. So therefore, you need to entice people to buy your debt. The world is not anticipating a default by the U.S. because it's never happened. However, the footsies that they play in Washington inside what they call the Beltway is something that really is sending the markets at this particular point into the nervous sphere, which is why, as I just said, the 30-year went up and the 10-year yield has gone up 1.53 as of today. So since it's been historically low, the 10-year trading at the beginning of the pandemic at 0.3, that's 0.3%, is now trading at 1.5% a year and 4 months later. Has much changed in the economy? No, not that much. But what we've tried to do is send demand for the 10-year treasury upwards. So therefore, we have to offer more yield. By offering more yield, somebody's got to pay for it. And that comes in the form of raising the interest rate on mortgages that they sell you. That's why the debt and what happens with the debt and how Main Street banks look at it, how they get nervous about it, and how, you know, the trickle-down effect to every other institution out there who has borrowed either from the Big Five or the Big Seven or has a direct line with an independent that they then use to fund loans. All of this is a problem. It's a problem that we really have no answer for until they, you know, extend the debt limit. Now, what is the debt limit? Does anybody know? What is it, $28 trillion? Think about that for a second, right? They have a budgetary item going through Congress right now. They're trying to pass a $1 trillion infrastructure and a $3.5 trillion something other. I mean, I'm from New England, so I'm Yankee cheap, and these numbers are driving me crazy. However, when I hear those numbers versus what the actual number is for the debt, right, the government doesn't run like your house. They just keep adding to it. There will be no real issue with it as long as the balance of payments can be made. What are the balance of payments? Things like the debt ceiling and to be able to borrow money to pay the debt of the United States on a monthly basis. Can that happen? Will that happen? I don't know. And the problem of it, the problem is right now, if you are trying to lock a loan and you tried to lock a loan today, you are going to pay a quarter point to almost a half a point in some cases more than you did a week ago, just because of the issue with the debt. That's why it's important. That's why if you have any influence over anybody, get the national debt ceiling to rise. But, you know, I don't have any say over that, and I don't have any issue with people who do. I think the entire system of how we work this budgetary item, how we work the debt ceiling, how we work most of the financial issues inside the Beltway in Washington has made me crazy. Because it, when I go to my customer and I say, hey, look, we should have locked last week, and they're going to say, why didn't we lock last week? And I have to come up with a reason why. Either you didn't tell me to, or I just didn't do it because I thought the rates would remain the same, probably going to lose that customer. And that's no good for me. And the customer itself is going to have to start all over again. And all these things are because the silliness going on in Washington, not raising the debt limit, and it's causing your rate to go up. That's why it's important. That's why you need to pay attention to it and make sure that if your loan is able to be locked at a lower than what it is today, do so, because we don't know where this is headed. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show. Each and every week, we bring to you information about what's going on in your neighborhood, your city, your town, your state, maybe even across the country. As you know, Malibu Funding is the company that sponsors this show, and they're in about 13 different states. The show, The Mortgage Voice, with me, Jeff Barton, we're in five states, so you can see and hear us almost anywhere. And so bringing you information about purchase, about real estate, about refinance, what's happening in the market, that's all very, very important to you, especially if you're in a position right now to take advantage of what's going on with the interest rates, or actually interest rates are going up a little bit today, so buyer beware, right? But I wanted to get to our first guest right away, Gino Payne, who has been gracious enough to join us today. Very busy guy. He's in Las Vegas, Nevada. And we talk about entrepreneurship on the show all the time. People who are in businesses that you may or may not know about, but who have really made it on their own and done things maybe in an unconventional way, but to break into an industry which is not easy to do so, and to continue to work and be extremely successful, which is the film and television business, is Gino Payne, and I welcome him to the show today. Gino, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm fine. Hey, don't be so energetic. Oh, my gosh. Hey, so I know that you're working currently with the Raiders, and you have a meeting currently with the Las Vegas Knights. Tell me, what is it like in your end of the business to try to continually go out there and show people what you can do? What is that like?
Well, it's actually in television and film production in Las Vegas. It's actually quite different from how it is if you just hop over the mountain to L.A. It's quite different here, where there's not a ton of competition in that field. And so a lot of us who are really sort of operating at the top of the craft, it's mostly just word of mouth. We really don't sort of reach out to the teams. The teams reach out to us. When the Raiders came in town, when the Knights came in town, they reached out to us, and me and a couple other guys. And then the Raiders fall through. They kind of asked the Knights, who's the guy that are not going to, messes up, and they send them a list, and then they have to try to fill the other roles after that list.
There's many people in our listening audience. We're from Albuquerque all the way up to Tahoe, and certainly in Southern California as well as Las Vegas on the radio. A lot of people in our listening area who love that business, and they love the fact that there's some romantic elements to it, not physically romantic, but just the idea that you're a star and you're working with stars. What's the reality of working in that business?
Well, I the best way to say it is, I forget who said it, but Hollywood is not a red carpet. it's anger doors at 5 a.m. in the morning, it's dusty sound stages, and 14 to 16-hour days inside of these large hangars. That's the stuff that where the cameras come out that most people think of. But yeah, it's a lot of trying to create perfection that doesn't happen. It's not like we're saving lives or anything.
Right.
But there's a lot of high focus, time and hard work.
The organization, being able to lead people, obviously knowing the job technically, is all part of what you do. What's the part that you enjoy the most?
I love the storytelling element of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, you and I actually worked on a project together.
Yep.
Here recently, and the stories that come out of even a project that's non-scripted, these are real-life stories, hearing stories, reflecting those stories, and sharing that, I think it's really cool because film, television, radio, these are elements where you get to experience a life or a part of someone's life, that you don't have to pay the price for life, right? The price for experiences is risk. So you don't have to pay that price, right? You just get to hear that story, get that experience, and take that lesson with you. And so that's my favorite part is it's the story element of it.
And telling that story to a specific audience or a greater audience, depending on whatever the medium is, I guess that's the technical knowledge that you have to bring, because there's many different formats nowadays, especially with, you know, the different production companies, the different ways that you can deliver content. Do you find it easier working in one medium than another?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly mediums that are much, much easier. I'd say, like, television is quite easy. It's dying a bit.
Right.
If it's not live sports or anything like that, it's pretty much dying. All right, but you know, television is much easier, and then film, and then I would say social media, that kind of area is the growing, developing final frontier that we're on right now. And it's ever-changing, ever-growing. You're targeting an audience that's young, and they're hard to advertise to, they're hard to sell on anything, because they've been born since all the tricks that we created. They were born into it, so they know how it goes.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that. On our show, what we do is we do talk a lot about how realtors and how loan companies advertise and how they're going to get to the next generation. Who are the people that are going to be able to afford a house, get a job, to be able to pay for the down payment and afford the mortgage payments? How do you reach these people? Obviously, traditionally, we've been doing it through radio, even newspapers, magazines, television. What in the social media area, because it's growing and it's new, where do you see some of the advantages of someone who, obviously, like yourself, has insight into how to deliver content, but where do you see maybe the next frontier in terms of whether it's a TikTok or Instagram or maybe a different way by which to deliver this?
Yeah, I mean, it's really that simple. You know, you just really have to be on social media. And I got to tell you, there are a lot of people who are not, you know, they're not, you know, sort of grinding through the crowd, and they're sort of more established. So, you know, you'll see people like that are not necessarily on social media, right?
Right.
But if you're trying to make a way, and you're trying to carve your way to the top, and you're not on social media, you're seriously missing out on a massive audience, because we're not just talking about Instagram and TikTok, where you got a bunch of kids or some people or young adults. We're talking Facebook and Twitter. And to be quite frank, TikTok has a lot of adults on them as well.
Yep.
I mean, you could spend an hour going down a rabbit hole on TikTok.
Yep. you sure so, can, right.
Yeah, I mean, so, getting on all these social medias is just essential, because, see, I was shooting an event, and a woman walked up to me, and she said, you know, where's your business card? And I said, if you give me a business card, I said, oh, I'm sorry, I don't have one. Let's link on social media.
Right.
And she kind of looked at me, and she didn't hold back. She said, you don't have a business card? What kind of a business person are you? And I didn't have the time to explain.
Right.
I didn't have the time to explain that a business card, if I give you my business card and I send you to my website, what you're going to see is the very best of everything I've ever done. You're never going to see any of the things that I'm not so excited about. You're never going to see how many days I'm actually working and who I'm working with and all this stuff. You're really just going to see the very best of what I want you to see. But if you're with someone on social media, you can see how active they are,
mm-hmm.
how engaged their clientele and their audience is. You can see, not just that, but you can see how well other people respond to their stuff. You have an immediate access to a tremendous referral base. Everyone that's following them, that's working with them, you can just reach right out to them without asking for any permission. You know, you get to see the best stuff. You get to see the stuff that they put out, and before they knew it wasn't going to, you know, pop off or flop. You just get a more real-time, active point of view of everything they're doing, and it's harder for them to fake it. As fake as social media is, it's harder to fake social media than it is a website.
You know, it's that you say that, and we're trying to explain that to someone. I'm going to guess this person is of an age which they don't really understand social media's impact, nor the future of how business is going to be done almost exclusively. The older group,
right?
Right?
Yep. She was definitely not She's definitely not young.
Right, exactly. And so for those people, myself included, it is a tough world out there. I remember my father, who I sat on his lap while they landed on the moon, he looked at me as if, you know, he had just discovered penicillin himself. It was so new and different. Yet to me, it was just like another day watching TV. So we grew up in a different time. The people coming up today have grown up in a different time. So social media is the only access point to where most of these people are going to gain access to marketplaces for homes, for mortgages, for anything.
Yep. I mean, and to be, you know, the biggest issue is, you know, everything's about right now. Like, we were trying to advertise products, and we quickly realized you can't advertise something to someone that you expect them to do later. Not in this climate. You know, no, long gone is the day where our favorite TV show is coming on, our favorite radio show is coming on, and we're going to block out our space in our schedule to sit down and watch or listen to it. That day is gone. Listen, if I can't click on it when I'm ready, then I'm not going to be able to watch it. If I can't, it started off with, what was it called when you used to record it on your phone? DVRs.
Yeah,
started
right.
out with the DVR, and basically now all the streaming and all the internet, you know, if the only thing people etch out time in their schedule for is live sports. Right. Everything else, they want to play it back. So when you're selling someone an advertisement, you're running an ad. If that ad isn't, here's what the thing is, do it now and get it through my head before I can swipe up in 10 seconds, you just miss your ad dollars or just going down a drain.
Hey, Gina, we're up against the clock. So apologize. I'd like to explore further, but we got to go. So could you shout out a phone number to somebody who's interested in you? At what you do out there in Vegas, get a hold of you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to stick true to what I just said. So
yep.
If you want to get a hold of me, follow me on social media. The best place to start is on Instagram, sir_Gino. So that's SIR_GINO. If you can send me from there, then you'll have access to all the rest of the stuff from that page.
Excellent. Gino, thank you very much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's Gino Payne. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@MalibuFunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show. Thanks very much for listening. We bring to you each and every week guests that bring you information about mortgages, about loans, about real estate, about the state of the market, about where we are, about some of the political goings, some of the international things that may affect mortgage rates and the availability of funds here in the U.S. There's lots going on always, and we always seem to get this distracted by whatever is going on in the news. If you're out there and you're listening and you want to buy a house or you're in process of buying a house, don't just shut all that stuff out. The best thing to do is to remain focused on the task at hand, which is 30 to 45 days in the future, you will have a home or you will have your refinance done. And that's the most important thing. The rest of this stuff is all just noise. And whether it's in football or whether it's other things in your life, focusing on the problem and getting to the answers is the best thing to do to remain calm and relaxed while the rest of the world is kind of crumbling around you. To bring to our show some of that calm and some of that knowledge and experience is Maria Schroeder from Quantic Bank. She joins us now. Maria, how are you?
Good. How are you guys? Hope you're having a great day out there.
We are having a great day. As always, we try to, like I say, when it's show day, which is Tuesdays, we usually do our recording, which this show is being recorded now on Tuesday, and we air it on the weekends, and we air it on a whole bunch of places all over the place, as well as 10 different podcasts, and we're on YouTube and a bunch like that. We try to stay to the positive because there's too much negative going on out there, and some of the programs that Quantic Bank can help us with, because they have portfolio products available, is part of that. Tell us about some of the programs you have to offer there.
Well, one of the great things, especially with, you know, some of the negative, you know, we're kind of at a tail end of a worldwide pandemic, which
yep.
really impacted the self-employed small business owners.
I agree.
And I think that there's a lot of, you know, hesitations with self-employed borrowers and a small business owners thinking that they can't buy a house until they're completely out of it. And that's not the case. Quantic Bank offers programs that look beyond that, because they look at your history of your payments and the money that you might have in the bank. And just because your business might have had a hiccup with, you know, with most of everybody else in the world that possibly had, doesn't mean that you can't buy a house or take advantage of, you know, opportunities, or maybe tap into some of your equities to kind of, you know, really kind of safeguard you from, or take you completely out of, you know, whatever the pandemic happened. And so please talk to your realtors and your loan officers and ask them, like, hey, there's these programs that Quantic offers where income is not a big factor.
Exactly. So outline a specific, you know, kind of example of what that means. How would a borrower look at somebody who says that and say, well, what do they mean? Income doesn't matter. What are we looking at here?
Well, Quantic will do loans where they'll look at beyond the full picture, where we're not going to qualify them based on just what their income looks like or what they report on their tax return. And we all know that being a, one of the perks of being a self-employed, you know, self-employed or a business owner is that the government allows you to have write-offs, right?
Right.
That helps you thrive your business, and you can. Quantic offers programs where you can do a self-prepared P&L or a P&L with your CPA that truly shows your income, not what you record.
Right.
And that will help you increase your odds of getting into a home, your dream home.
What are some of the major, I guess, programs that you're seeing get utilized at Quantic? I mean, is it this program? Is it a different kind?
Yes. This is pretty much our bread and butter, because we have our special designation that allows us to have this program. So it's then where we allow, where we can, that's basically it. Because, you know, you can go to any bank on the corner and get a conventional loan where you can show 2 years tax returns, your, you know, consistency in income or no decline in your income, which is pretty much hard to do when we had a worldwide pandemic, right?
Right,
for the last 2 years.
Well,
maybe the last
year
looked great, and that's where, you know, lenders like Quantic or, you know, the alt lenders out there are a huge solution, you know?
No, I think that's true, and I think because of that fact, you should be seeing an uptick in business when rates go up, because those types of loans are now going to be even further out of reach, just because it's going to be more costly. And the documentation, when rates go up, the documentation is going to go up too, right, for a lot of these lenders, because they're going to see
Correct.
A tightening market and credit's going to get tight. Your particular bank having the reverse of that, meaning that if you show what your business is doing, or you have bank statement programs, or a no-income type of loan, obviously the demand for your product is going to go up.
Yes, and then, you know, and we definitely want clients that, you know, because there is, the income might be a little bit less encumbersome. You know, we're looking at the history of the borrower, and they've had a great credit history, right? You have borrowers who pay on their time, and, you know, they've always made their credit and their obligations a priority, but maybe because they were wise and shrewd and, you know, saved for rainy days and they have money in the bank, that still makes them, like, viable people who can get loans, not just because what they declared on the tax return.
Now,
and
the,
we see that.
The difference between rates, between what you would consider a conventional 20% down kind of purchase with good credit score versus what you're offering, is not even that much, is it?
No, I don't think so.
Right.
Not in compared to the ease of our product. We're probably anywhere from, conventional rates are in, like, the high threes to the low threes.
Right.
Low three to mid threes, and we're probably low fives to mid fives.
Right.
But you have to understand, you know, maybe that extra $500 in payment is, it's way more favorable than paying hundreds of thousands of dollars or tens of thousands of dollars in taxes in order for you to qualify for that.
Well, that's the trade-off,
you know,
right?
Loan.
That's exactly right. If you're looking at write-offs for your business or your person, and you're weighing that against declaring all that income with which to get approved for this loan at a lower rate, like you say, paying the taxes. The full boat on taxes without the write-offs is substantial, especially for business, which I believe business tax rates are much higher than they are in the personal tax rate anyway. So it really depends. And how do you differentiate that when you're looking at a person? Is it business? Is it personal bank accounts? What are you looking at?
Wouldn't you just look at profit and loss that's done by you and your CPA or your tax preparer? And that kind of gives us an indication of what you profit, what your true profit is, what you put in your, you know, what you pay yourself. So I would not, if I was a business, self-employed business owner, I would always take, I'd rather keep the money to myself and maybe pay an extra $500 and have that extra write-off on my taxes versus
right.
giving it away. And because you could take that, instead of paying that taxes, you could invest in your home. You can invest in yourself. You can invest in your business to grow.
What typical credit scores are you looking at for these types of loans?
We're looking for 660 to 700 FICO scores is probably our sweet spot.
Okay, that's very reasonable. And on a purchase, for instance, what kind of down payment and what kind of loan to value?
We're looking at about 20 to 25% is about our average down payment.
Okay.
Up to anywhere from $1.5 million to $2 million max loan amount.
Oh, that's very sweet. Okay, very good. And as you say, you portfolio, you keep these loans for yourself, right? I mean, Quantic doesn't go out there in the market and sell them, or at least maybe they do,
we
but not...
We do put them on our balance sheet, but
right.
we do ultimately, possibly, we do sell some of it, and then the other part is that we securitize it. You know, so... We do a combination of all three.
Excellent. Hey, listen, we're up against it. Can you tell people how they get a hold of you on these terrific programs? Maybe had some questions?
Absolutely. You can give me a call at 949-878-7045.
Excellent. Thank you, Maria, very much for coming on the show once again. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you, Jeff, for having me.
Yep, thank you. And I'm Jeff Barton, your voice for the mortgage industry. That's Maria Schroeder from Quantic Bank. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in, for listening each and every week as we bring to you information about mortgages, about real estate from different parts of the country. As you all know, our show reaches down to Albuquerque, New Mexico, up to Las Vegas, Nevada, up to Tahoe in mid-California, as well as in Southern California, where we have a couple of great radio stations down there. We carry a video feed on YouTube, as well as nine podcasts. So if you are able in any medium to see what we do, we try to help you. You have questions about what's going on in the market. Can I afford this? Why isn't there this? How come that's happening? We try to supply those answers. Most of the time, I don't supply them. I bring great guests on the show who do. And from Las Vegas, Nevada, Jessica Hearns joins us, who is a terrific real estate agent there. Jessica, how are you?
I am wonderful. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much, and thanks for coming on the show.
I am happy to be here.
Excellent. Okay, first off, tell us a little bit about what's happening in the market. I know we've, you know, experienced a very, you know, competitive summer, I guess, and now we're into fall. What's happening now?
Right now, we are still in the midst of a seller's market. So out here in Nevada, the inventory is still low. However, I am seeing an increase in the homes that are available in the market. So it is slowly starting to slow down and settle. However, if you are one of those thinking about selling, like, I will get it in as soon as possible because it's definitely starting to be more inventory on the market. And also, a lot of those homes that were in forbearance are slowly starting to come out. So with that being said, either hopefully they were financially able to get caught up on those payments. And if not, a lot of those homeowners will get ready to start selling their homes, too, as well, to avoid foreclosure. So,
yeah, interesting that you say that.
What's going on right now?
Yeah, thank you. The forbearance part of it, interesting. Do you think that we'll see any of that forbearance hit the market in terms of properties being foreclosed on?
I'll say maybe like a good like 10% of those people, which will still be a lot, because I think yep. around like 444,000 homes went into the forbearance program. So it really depends on those people who will be able to get out of it, because they're going to definitely try to avoid getting foreclosed on. So it definitely will have a significant change in the market as far as homes being up for sale, because a lot of people didn't get jobs or didn't, you know, get back into their career or get those hours that they were used to, so they're still not able to afford those mortgage payments.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we read or hear about a lot of jobs being available of over 10 million, yet there are 8 million people out of work. Yet at the same time, we're still in the midst of pretty heavy, I mean, 1.5 million people nationwide still in forbearance. I don't know where it's going to shake out. So employment in Vegas, are you seeing it increase, decrease? How are the casinos doing?
As far as employment in Vegas, I used to work in the casino industry, and they cut down a bit on staff. Like, as many table games as far as the dealers, there's a lot of the table games haven't opened back up. They're still keeping it spaced out. So
I see.
They cut a lot of staff. It depends on which casino, which property. Some of them, a lot of people have been coming back, but yeah, it's been definitely Resort World opening. That opened a lot of positions for, you know, employment as well. But the casinos have definitely reduced their employment, and I don't see it going back up anytime soon with the way everything is panning out.
Okay, so
a lot of times, you know, now you have to, you know, be vaccinated for employment in a lot of places, especially
right.
with the Raiders facility. So, you know, that has an impact as well.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, in a lot of businesses, in your business in particular, how are you dealing with that when you have to show a house or whether you list a house and people are coming in? Is it still as strict and stringent as it had been during the peak of the pandemic?
The thing with the real estate, people are still wanting to purchase homes. People are still wanting to sell. We're being very careful with it. I offer my clients hand sanitizer before and after we enter the home. We always have our face masks on, and I give my clients their space. So I do make sure I social distance with them and just keep, you know, my 6 feet away from them as well, just to be safe and cautious for everyone.
Now, the price of homes in Vegas, whether it's you know, a high rise or whether it's a single family, have really increased. The equity in the homes has really gone up over the last couple of years. How has it affected the buyers? Are there still, I mean, you were saying that there's more inventory, but with a lack of, I guess, some of the casinos hiring back all their employees, do you see buyers still as plentiful, or are they out-of-state buyers? Where are the buyers coming from?
I've noticed a lot of buyers are coming in from California because they can
right.
get a lot more for their money here.
Right.
So and we're getting a lot of cash buyers coming in, and they're purchasing up the homes. Like, they don't care what the rate is. They're coming in cash, over in offers. So for the standard buyers who have their mortgage loans and, you know, barely saved to be able to put their down payment, it's a little tough for them.
Yep.
Because the offers that are being accepted are the people who are coming in offering $10,000 or $15,000 over the appraised value.
Yeah.
But I am slowly seeing a big decrease in that, and I'm seeing some people there doing price drops on their homes. So as the market is slowly getting more stable, we will see a decrease in the home prices. Would it be significant and a great deal to just hop in? Maybe not, but any change is better.
What do you do with your business? Are you a buyer's agent? Are you a seller's agent? Do you do both? What are you doing?
I do both. I work with buyers and sellers.
Okay.
I also work with investors, and I work with new construction homes. I sell those as well. So I pretty much specialize in all of those areas.
I see. And high-end versus low-end. What is the high-end now in Vegas?
The high-end average, especially if you're in the Henderson market, for a single family, I would say around depending on what you're looking for. Like, I have a client now, they're looking for a house with a pool, at least 4 bedrooms in the Henderson area and South Las Vegas area. And for a home like that, you're looking at around anywhere between $650,000 or more.
I see.
And for the average single-family home, it's, even just in Nevada alone, the average single-family home has now risen to around $400,000. So
yeah, right, exactly.
Definitely increased.
You know, back in 08, I was we were working out there, and I had an opportunity to buy a bunch of condos at like $20,000, $25,000. I'm still kicking myself that I never took advantage. Do you see that the market may be peaking now, or as you said, because there's more buyers coming on, or do you think that there's still a lot of room to have price growth in the Las Vegas market?
I think we may be peaking. I don't see it getting any higher. If anything, I'll see it start to level out and maybe decrease. But the way the market is in Nevada, like, it's constantly growing. They're constantly changing, remodeling and adding to the city. So a lot of people are looking to move here. And what I'm noticing is they just keep expanding, going further north with building the homes and further south. And so they're trying to build up for the demand that we have.
You see,
I can see it.
Yeah, No, thank you. Thank you. I don't mean to interrupt you. If I am, just slap me down and just say, stop interrupting me.
Oh, no, please.
Okay. So you mentioned new home builders. All the big players are out there. Where do you see the largest amount of new homes being constructed? In the northwest, northeast? Is it more southeast? Where do you think it is?
You know what? The majority I'm seeing is they're actually both opposite. I'm seeing a lot in the northwest area of Las Vegas going out that way in the north. They're building and expanding because it's nothing but space and empty land, and they're building up fast out there. And also in Henderson, towards Inspirato, where the Raiders practice facility is, they're building a whole community over there, and it's gorgeous. It's beautiful, but they're definitely extending out in that territory towards California as well.
You know, it's exciting having both sports teams there, and obviously the influx of both fans for the teams, but also civic pride. Do you see that that's changing some of the way that the locals are feeling about where they live?
Oh, those Raiders games are packed, and people have pride. People are excited. Of course, the Oakland Raider fans aren't as excited, but the people in Nevada, we are happy to have a football team. And I see, every time I'm out, I always see Golden Knights jerseys and Las Vegas Raiders. So we're going to have that fan base here that's going to be strong and committed and at these games. So I'm excited about it.
Excellent. Jessica Hearns just joined us. Jessica, could you shout out a way by which people can get in touch with you, especially if they're looking for a terrific realtor out there in the Vegas area?
Yes, I would love to help you guys out and meet you. You can come to my office or we can have a virtual meeting. My cell that I use for business is 702-832-6059, or you can email me at jessica@winningrealty.com.
Jessica.
That's Jessica, J-E-S-S-I-C-A, at winningrealty.com.
Thank you very much for coming on the show. I'd like to do it again. I really appreciated the information, and also you're very excited to be in real estate out there, and it's probably a great time to do that. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. And I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@MalibuFunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. You have reached Malibu Funding, yay, on the radio. And that's the sponsor for this show. And I'm Jeff Barton, and this is The Mortgage Voice. You can see us on YouTube if you go to YouTube. And Daryl, are we on a bunch of podcasts, I think?
We sure are, Jeff. YouTube, you mentioned Apple Podcasts, Google Music Play, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher. Those are the S ones.
Okay.
And then... Remember Fibber McGee and Molly in the closet? Yeah, well, I just had one of the closet experiences here for me.
We had Stitcher, we had Spreaker, and we had YouTube and
we've got all
Apple.
Those, iHeartMedia, Radio.com, YouTube, and of course, Podclips.io.
Excellent. Podclips.io. If you're looking for a place that you can hear a bunch of different great podcasts, go to Podclips.io. The reason being is that they have a lot of different topics. New people you probably haven't heard before. interesting, whether it's lifestyle or health or sports or finance or what I'm in. There's all kinds of things, and go to it. It'll be terrific, and you'll enjoy yourself.
I think they just posted their 200th show.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Okay, so very good. So quickly they will become a larger and larger piece of the podcast world. And by the way, podcasting itself is very interesting. I enjoy it quite a bit. I'd like to do more of it. The problem with podcasting, social media, posting for anybody not of the era that grew up in all that, it's just time-consuming. What do you think, Daryl? Do you think, in fact, it is something that you can sustain the older you get? I'm having a difficult time doing it.
I think part of it is to find out what you really want. You've got to sort through a lot of crap to get there.
Yeah, I think that's true, too, for the listener as well as the podcaster.
Yeah, because anybody with a $60 microphone and an internet connection can go on there. So there's no barrier to entry, so to speak.
No, which is a good thing. I like no barriers to entries on most things. Like you say, though, trying to be somebody in a world that everybody can be somebody is not easy.
True, and getting a name for yourself, and the people that are really successful are the people that advertise and let people know that they're there. Right.
Right.
It's like if the tree falls in the woods.
Right. Did anybody hear it? Right. Exactly. Right. Okay. Let's get to a couple of things I wanted to now. Thank you, Daryl. Climate change, home prices, inflation. They all have something in common, and they all have something to do with what you need to do if you're trying to buy a house or you want to refi. Rates themselves really cost you. A quarter point over a certain number of years is going to cost you tens and thousands of dollars. Why pay when you don't have to? Getting a lower interest rate is about paying attention to what happens in the bond market. We talked about it in an earlier section, so we don't have to go through that again. But some of the other things that we have to talk about, inflation. Inflation is, as somebody said to me, inflation, this is not your grandmother's inflation. Now, what do they mean by that? Inflation in general occurs when somebody wants something more than there is. Therefore, the price of that thing goes up. That's inflation. The point to this economist who was talking, they said, this isn't about demand. This is about supply. And I'm thinking, well, what's the difference between supply and what's the difference between supply and demand? Well, in a demand market, you are trying to keep up with what is wanted by the consumer. In a supply issue, you're just not making enough for just what either was happening or what is needed. And so that difference being, once supply is met, you should see the inflation of the thing level off or actually go down. If demand is finally met, you will have hit a price range, a price peak that probably will sustain. So when they talk about inflation, and if you're out there, you know food's gone up. You know restaurant prices have gone up. Certainly cars have gone up. Certainly used cars have gone up. Anything having to do with repair work has gone up. That's because a lot of what is supplied has been reduced. You've been to the restaurant, there's one person working 97 tables. That's a reduction in the supply of workers for that particular job, which is why prices on the menu went up. That's what they say, right? If you had more people working, you would have less demand because you would have people in and out the door more quickly. That's what we're talking about here. So supply itself needs to be increased. If we talk about transitional. So this really means when supply has caught up with demand, you will see a leveling off of prices and an eventual reduction in the price that you pay. That's what we're talking about. So in circumstances where we're talking about product for housing, one of the reasons we've seen such a spike in prices is because we have a lack of housing. Now, we've had a lack of housing, as we've talked about many, many times on this show, for 12 years, 13 years. We've been building a million less houses a year than we actually need. Now, because we're dealing in a marketplace that is, what do you have now? We want it now. And because it's unavailable, prices are going to go up if you want something that is available. That's a supply issue. Will the housing market be resupplied, or will the supply for housing go up? Will it go up? We've seen the forbearance, right, issues, and we have about 1.5 million properties right now still in forbearance. I get calls all the time from customers who say, hey, are we going to see some of this product? Well, harken back to 2007, 2008, when we had the mortgage meltdown or the Great Recession or whatever you want to call it. When that happened, what we had were millions of homes that went into foreclosure because they couldn't pay their mortgage. They didn't have this moratorium. They just went right to foreclosure. What happened to those properties? Were they listed on the market? Were we able as consumers to buy those foreclosed homes and to quickly get a great deal? The answer was no. What's the answer in today's market? The answer is no. You're not going to see any of these properties. The reason is that most of the banks who are holding the paper are going to do a workout. Once people are back working, they're going to pay current, and most of that debt is going to be attached to the back end of the loan. However they amortize it, I don't know if they've worked that out, but that's what's going to happen. Nobody wants to kick anybody out of a house. In the 2007-2008 Great Recession, in those days, there were still tremendous consumer protections in most metropolitan areas and most large states. The reason for that is the same as it is today. Nobody wants to kick people out of their home. It's not because they're being nice or not because they're benevolent, but because it is so difficult, costly, and it gives you as the lender or the person trying to kick them out such agita and also bad reputation that you'd much prefer to keep them in the home, and that's going to happen this time. You will not see those properties on the market, and you will not be able to get those properties at a tremendous discount. Climate change. What is happening with climate change and how is it affecting housing and prices? We already can see. If you're in any part of California, or the West for that matter, and you haven't been in within 50 miles of a fire, that's unique. This state, California, where we're broadcasting from, our neighboring states, whether it be Idaho, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Colorado, Texas, Arizona, have all seen their share of fires this year alone. Thousands of fires still burn. Why does this affect rate? Because risk is about how are we going to collect if the house burns down. If you're in an area where you have a lot of fires, guess what? The risk to that particular house goes up. Your fire insurance is going to cost more. The loan on your house is going to cost more. It affects you. Now, that's just fires. Let's talk hurricanes. We're into 19 or 20 major storms, if not hurricanes, on the East Coast in the Gulf, affecting millions and millions of homes and, obviously, those borrowers looking to either refinance or get a mortgage. That weather, that climate, yes, it's affecting them, and it's affecting them in terms of costs for insurance as well as the rate you're trying to get in your home. All of these things are affecting everything you do, whether it's the climate change, whether it's inflation. Your home prices are costing more and more as a result of less product because people don't want to take the risk to get out there and build homes, especially in climate conditions that they cannot predict nor insure for without paying through the roof. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for listening to the show once again, and we will see you next time.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. For more on today's topic, visit www.malibufunding.net.